Welcome. I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is a special election edition of Your Call. Every Thursday through Election Day, we will bring you a special second hour of Your Call covering local and state issues and the democratic process. Most of the attention in this year's election is on the presidential race, but so much is happening at the local and state level. In November, we will be voting on 17 state propositions in California. 17. We also have a lot of local ballot measures and many races that will impact us for many years to come. Today, we are kicking off our special hour by talking about the bewildering San Francisco ballot, which includes 24 measures. If you live in San Francisco, you will be voting on 24 measures plus a regional BART measure, which equals 25. We also have 14 candidates running for seats on the Board of Supervisors, City College Board, and the BART Board, and we will be voting for a San Francisco Superior Court judge. So we'll be talking about that. We'll also be following the money today, and we are joined by three guests. Michael Stoll is executive director and editor of the San Francisco Public Press, a local non-commercial news organization. The Public Press recently published an in-depth report called The Rising Cost of Winning Votes. Last year, spending on local elections in San Francisco was the highest on record, reaching nearly $28 million. Airbnb crushed a proposal to regulate the short-term rental industry by spending a whopping $9 million. And Michael joins me in studio. Hi, Michael. Welcome back to the show.
Thank you so much for having me.
Great to have you. Angela Woodall is San Francisco Public Press's project editor and a freelance journalist. She worked on those stories, and she joins us on the line from New York. Hi, Angela. Thanks for joining us.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Great to have you. And John Gollinger is an environmental attorney who lives in North Beach. John has an op-ed in the San Francisco Examiner called Stirring Up San Francisco's Alphabet Soup. And John also joins us in studio. Hi, John.
Hi, Rose. Good morning.
Thank you for coming in.
My pleasure.
So we're just over about 2 months away from the November 8th election. Most of the attention is on the presidential race and all of the polls, but we really want to talk about local issues. 24 measures plus that regional BART measure, that is a lot. I think it's the most that I've ever seen.
It's the most since 1993. There were 28. It went all the way A to Z and around to double B that year. So it's most in a long time.
It's so overwhelming. Mm-hmm. And I'm afraid that people are going to say, I'm not voting because there's so much. And that's why we're doing this show. We hope you vote. And we want to try to give you as much information as possible. But John, why 25?
Well, I mean, one reason, my view is if you look at the measures themselves, a lot of them are on there because City Hall hasn't been solving problems. So there's a measure to take the maintenance of street trees, which have been falling over and hurting people, and property owners have been paying for sidewalk damage off the plates of property owners. That had been the case for years, but City Hall pushed it back during budget crisis times. But couldn't resolve it on their own, so now that's on the ballot. There are some measures on the ballot, people running for office and using them as platforms, and we all have different views on whether those are good or bad ones. There also are about half the measures deal with good government, so balance of power on the Board of Supervisors versus the mayor, and whether voters should elect their district supervisors or whether they should be appointed, that kind of thing. So it's a mishmash, I think. It's the most in a long time. City Hall is probably about as dysfunctional as it's been in a long time. And this is also a big ballot, big election year with everyone paying attention to the presidential. The more people that vote, the more people think they want to solve problems, and that's why they're given the chance.
Why do you say City Hall is very dysfunctional at this time?
Well, for most of the last 5 years, we had a mayor in lockstep with the board, and they were, you know, ideologically, the majority of the board and the mayor were aligned. So there was very many of the measures on the ballot were put there by supervisors. That really wasn't likely to happen when the supervisors and the mayor could just get it done quietly at City Hall. There also are, I think, some measures on there because problems. Affordable housing, everyone knows, is in a horrible state, and evictions. And there are some measures because City Hall hasn't been dealing with them.
Right.
And so there are some, you know, some voters and others who have put measures on to try to go after some of those problems.
And San Francisco Magazine had a piece called San Francisco Voters on More Stuff Than Anything. San Francisco Votes on More Stuff Than Anything. It's a disaster, and we love it, and it won't stop. And this piece points out that a lot of supervisors who are running again or running for Senate are introducing measures because they want media. So, for example, you also have Norman Yee, Supervisor Norman Yee, carrying legislation to force supervisorial appointments into the Municipal Transportation Agency Board. Supervisor John Avalos is plugging a measure that would require special elections when supervisor seats become vacant. Supervisor Malia Cohen will lock in baseline spending for seniors and disabled adults and then mandate $33 million in additional funding over the next decade. Michael, what are your thoughts on this? What about politicians who are running for office who introduce measures to get more attention?
Well, I think John's right that what you're seeing on the ballot is pretty typical of sort of the California way of doing things, direct democracy instead of delegating responsibility for most of the governance to the legislative. And because there is now such it's really a toss up on the board who is going to which way the board is going to go in terms of the traditionally defined progressive moderate split. A lot of the ballot measures are now being used to position candidates for this coming election, and it's kind of a three-dimensional chess game. If the self-described progressive coalition is able to retain its current majority, then a lot of the powers that are being taken away from the mayor through these various ballot propositions will actually shift the balance of power even further in their direction and away from the mayor. And, you know, some of these are really tinkering around the edges, but others really go to the heart of especially the affordable housing and community development issue and who gets to decide what community development looks like and what affordable housing looks like.
Mm-hmm. There are a couple other dynamics. The fact there's no election next year for the first time in decades, I think. We've usually had an off-year municipal election in the year after the presidential for local seats like treasurer. A few years ago, there was a ballot measure that some supervisors put on there that changed that to consolidate those. So it's the first. So if you're looking at solving a problem and you don't want to wait till June 2018, you had to put it on this ballot. Another is San Francisco is unique in many ways, but one is that we're a charter city. So there are some things that can only be done by ballot, if you want to change the city charter in any way, and a number of these measures do that, the board of supervisors and the mayor can't do it without asking the voters. And that's where some of the structural changes you mentioned, the appointment process to the board that runs Muni, if the city hall agreed, even 100%, they would still have to go to the voters to change who appoints the directors of the agency that oversees Muni. That's a requirement.
And Angela, I know that you're not closely following the measures in San Francisco, but you do closely follow the money, and you worked on that in-depth public press report about spending on local elections in San Francisco reaching the highest record last year, nearly $28 million. So we have 25 measures, 24 plus the BART regional measure in San Francisco. What sort of effect does money have on this process and how people feel about voting on 25 different things?
Well, I think the money plays a huge part in this process. And I think what we saw in 2015 was really a blueprint for what's going to happen in 2016. And I'll just say, first of all, one of the things that someone told me and what we quoted in our story is, who's there to police it? There's a lot of money going on, and you have to sort of think of it as kind of this system where it's not just the money that you see for campaign contributions. It's not just the lobbying money. It's not just the things that are really apparent to us. If we think about it, and this is what I like to do, is think about it as sort of like the toxic load from pollutants that we're exposed to. It's sort of like, you know, year after year, month after month, cycle after cycle, election after election, and it's all these little points that we usually don't see, the meetings, the other things. So we can sort of see that money fairly easily because San Francisco has very strong disclosure regulations, but what we don't see is how that money works behind the scenes and how it all fits into the structure. And that's kind of what we did with this piece was we sort of dissected that and said, here are all the points. Here's the load that the politicians, the elected officials, are being exposed to all the time, and this is how it affects us. So if you think of us as the stream, like, you know, San Francisco's downstream or the voters are downstream, we're just getting all the stuff washed back at us, you know, all the sort of, like, toxic money.
Right.
So it's very important that people vote this year. And you know, what we did was sort of give them a roadmap for this is how you understand how the system works and how you can make a difference.
So what advice would you give to voters who want to be involved in this process but are completely overwhelmed by the 17 state propositions, and we'll have debates about those in the coming months, and then the 24 plus 1 here in San Francisco? And I'm guessing we'll be completely bombarded once again by mailers. I just got my first mailer yesterday on the penny per ounce tax on sugar-sweetened beverages in San Francisco, and we'll talk about that later in the show. But Angela, you know, based on your reporting, what you have found and learned about money in politics, what advice would you give to people so this isn't so overwhelming?
Well, first, I would look at who is paying for everything. And so that's fairly easy to see on the mailers and fairly easy to see on the TV ads, depending on how many are actually run this year. So once you sort of look at, you know, who's funding it, and you can do a quick search online to see who's behind the money. You can do that on the San Francisco Ethics Commission website, or you can look at the San Francisco Public Press's website, because we're following that very closely. And in the past, Noya Arroyo, who worked on this piece, has done an amazing job of really breaking down the different proposals and telling you what they really mean and who's behind them. So that would be the first step.
Michael, what would you add? What advice would you give to voters?
Well, there are a number of resources out there. You can – well, the ballot book is going to come out in a couple of weeks.
And it's going to be really thick.
And it's going to be really thick. And you have to kind of know how to read it because sometimes you actually do have to go to the language of the proposition. And there's a lot of cross-outs and, you know, strike this, add this. And the edits to those to the current law sometimes can be – deceptive. So what I love to do is have ballot book debate parties, mm-hmm. And I've done this a couple of years, and very quickly, sort of the wisdom of the crowd of your friends exposes some kind of hidden gems in these things, and it becomes really fun. You order a pizza, and you become a more informed citizen at the same time. The public press is going to have a ballot explainer for all the local propositions, and a little bit more cursory for all the candidates, since there are so many, by October 1st. Ballotpedia is also another resource, although they're not locally based. They do have an extensive local presence, and 48 Hills, as you mentioned during the break, the Chronicle and the Examiner have great sort of in-depth pieces one by one on some of these propositions. I would like to see them and some other publications do a little bit more, you know, kind of systematic listing and create a ballot guide for everything local, but it is overwhelming.
Completely overwhelming and overwhelming to media outlets. What about you, John? What advice do you have?
Well, I mean, I would say one good thing about San Francisco politics, there's a lot of nerds who like to volunteer their time digging into this stuff. So there are a wide array of groups, and I'm someone who's, you know, been involved for 16 years here, in many cases going around speaking to those groups on different issues. Folks are volunteers that run the local Democratic Party or the local Republican Party. They've all taken positions on all 25 of these issues already. You could go to the website of either. They'll send you stuff in the mail if you want to wait. Same is true for the tenants groups or the apartment association. All of them are keen to tell you what they think. Now, obviously, you got to weed through, but I think most San Francisco voters, particularly those who've been around, but even who are new, can figure out which groups they trust and make up their mind. I'd push back just a bit on the notion that having to spend, you know, maybe 5 minutes, 10 minutes on a measure that's going to have an impact on the way your street looks, whether homelessness problem gets dealt with, whether we have affordable housing, you know, whether our government is corrupt or clean, that's too much. I think we all spend, you know, 20 minutes, an hour figuring out where we're going to go to dinner this weekend or what show to see. You know, I was looking at concert tickets, and that took me 45 minutes to figure out which band I liked to go out and date this weekend. And I think there's a little bit too much. Once you drill down the measures, I don't know if we're going to get a chance to go through each one, A through X, but there's some of them, school bonds. Are we going to spend money to fix up our schools? I don't think that's a controversy. I think there are some people who would say no at all costs. A lot of people would say yes at all costs. That's done. And yes, there are some that are more complicated. Those are the ones you just need to figure out, which ones do I need to spend a little more time and make up my mind. Others you can probably figure out pretty quickly.
Just one point on spending time doing it. It used to be standard practice for newspapers in metropolitan regions to produce between 1 and 3 weeks before the election a thick voter guide. That doesn't happen anymore locally in general. And I would like to challenge the local media to kind of reinvest in that process instead of spending a lot of pages on supplements for tech companies and style. Glossy style guides.
Here, here. Today, this is a special election edition of Your Call. Every Thursday, we will bring you an election show covering local and state issues. And we'll talk about the democratic process. We'll also talk about the voting process. The ballot is overwhelming, but we want to do this show to give you as much information as possible so you are not overwhelmed and you do go to the polls and try to convince your friends to do the same because, John, I'm with you, but voter turnout has been so bad over the last couple of years. I mean, the last decade, really.
That's true. This election, I think 100% or pretty close of your listeners are going to go vote for either Hillary Clinton or Donald Trump.
Right.
And definitely the challenge locally is to make sure they don't not vote for everything else. So that is a good point.
Well, we are here for you. So if you have any questions specifically about the San Francisco ballot, we'd love to hear from you. You probably are starting to receive mailers. I just got one yesterday on Measure V. This is the tax on distributing sugar-sweetened beverages, and we'll talk about that later in the show. Give us a call at 866-798-8255. We're going to vote on 24 measures on the San Francisco ballot, plus a regional BART measure, so the total really is 25. We've got 14 candidates running for seats on the Board of Supervisors, City College Board, and the BART Board. We will also be voting for a San Francisco Superior Court judge. If there's something that you've been following closely or would like to talk about, we'd love to hear from you. You can also email feedback@yourcallradio.org. And let's hear from Tom in San Francisco. Hi, Tom. Welcome to the show.
Yes, and I wish you would stop using the word overwhelming. This is doable. We're intelligent. We'll take it step by step. And as you said, there's all of these sites on the web that'll, will connect with you and explain it to you. And the other thing, too, is we have a mayor that was elected with only 27% of the registered voters in San Francisco.
Right.
So this is a doable situation. It pays to be involved. And stop using the term overwhelming, please.
All right. I'll take your advice. Thank you. Instead, I'll just say you've got 25 measures in San Francisco and 17 in California. So start doing your homework.
You got 10 weeks
today.
So, put in a little time every day if you feel like you need to.
Well, and also, Tom brought up Mayor Ed Lee, and Tim Redmond, 48 Hills, points out in a piece why Ed Lee's policies are wrong, that the popularity of Ed Lee is so low, you will not find his name on a single ballot argument this fall.
I just looked through some of the ballot arguments. I'm working on one of the measures, Prop H, which is the public advocate measure. So that's the one I'm paying the most close attention to. And we know he opposes it, but his name was nowhere to be found. They put Mayor Willie Brown's name and Mayor Frank Jordan, who I challenged a number of listeners to even describe when he was mayor and what he did. But I think that is also an unusual circumstance when Gavin Newsom was mayor, when Willie Brown in the last couple decades, they were out there until they were no longer mayor on one side or the other. And that's maybe a bit of a power vacuum. And we're seeing some measures step up. There's one of the measures we can talk about, the sidewalk tent measure that Supervisor Farrell's put on. He's already running for mayor a few years from now, and he's clearly put that out there to stake a claim for himself on that issue and try to move it forward. And that's unusual. You've got a sitting mayor who just got reelected with not that many votes, but he did get reelected last year, and there's people running for to fill his seat already.
All right, so since you brought that up, that's Measure Q, prohibiting tents on public sidewalks. Tell us about that one.
Yeah, I mean, that's an issue in early 2000s. Gavin Newsom, when he was on the Board of Supervisors, successfully put a homelessness going after the homelessness measure called Care Not Cash on the ballot and went after the issue of vouchers rather than cash for homeless folks to try to make sure the money was used. But is that really more a tactical measure than anything else? It was put out there a year and a half before the election. They used it to organize. He then used the infrastructure to run for mayor, which succeeded. So if Supervisor Farrell is really seizing on an issue, I think everyone on every side of the spectrum agrees that people without homes that are, you know, forced to live on sidewalks doesn't serve anyone. That said, what do you do about it? The police already have the ability and have done so to clear tents off sidewalks when they're blocking the public right away. This measure really just says, makes a specific law to target that and tries to speed up enforcement. But, you know, my view is it's more of a tactical measure. I think that's in the way that they're pitching it around town, that's pretty clear that it's more about building a platform to, you know, to push this supervisor forward.
You also have Supervisors Tang, Cohen, and Wiener supporting this. Supervisor Avalos is writing the argument against it in the booklet. Anything to add on this one?
I think this is the year when homelessness has really kind of risen to the top of the political agenda.
Right.
And I think in polls that I've seen, this is probably pretty well correlated with Ed Lee's popularity ratings. There is a lot happening on the governmental level. There is a new Office of Homelessness and Affordable Housing. I'm probably mangling the name. But that's a combination of separate tracks in the Department of Public Health and the Human Services Agency. They're knitting all of these services together. They're eliminating duplicative services and straightening out a lot of bureaucratic mess and creating a kind of a one-stop shop for homeless services. There is a kind of tussle between the carrot and the stick approaches to homelessness, and I think this measure Q is definitely the stick, and it remains to be seen kind of which rises to the top of the political agenda in the next year or two.
I think that's right. There are three other measures dealing with homelessness, at least in part. They all deal though with the carrot, which is money for services and for housing. There's J and K, which are tied together. The first one, J, is a charter amendment to devote a certain amount of money to homelessness services and transportation also. K is an increase in the sales tax, which would fund those services. There's also letter W, which is about arts and homelessness services. That's a measure that is looking at the hotel tax that most people who are visiting San Francisco pay when they stay in hotels and where that money goes. For years, it went to art services. That's dwindled. This measure would make sure it goes back to art services. And they included, as Michael said, because I think it's top of the agenda for most voters, some more funding for other homelessness services. So those are, I think, the other way. But agreed, we all, I think, have our encounters with homeless people on the street, and they are real people, and they need somewhere to sleep, and we need to provide it for them. On the other hand, we need to also make sure the laws are enforced so that people can get around town without getting in some kind of trouble.
I think included in some of the arguments against this, and I'm not taking taking sides, is that the more you use the ballot to carve off pieces of the general fund for earmarked special uses for departments, so homeless service, seniors, muni, the more you restrict the ability of the government to move quickly to reapportion funds in the future. So this is something that you really have to kind of pay attention to and sort of tap into your own personal values as a voter to decide whether you want to tie the hands of local government for this particular purpose. The other thing about the sales tax, I found it really interesting a couple of weeks ago when there was a proposal to put a special tax on technology industry companies in order to pay for some of these services, and that was not put on the ballot. It came up at the Board of Supervisors. It didn't get enough to get on the ballot. In the same week, there was the proposal to raise the local sales tax from a total of 8.5 to 8.75 to 9.25 cents on the dollar. And so, on the one hand, there was this push from the, again, self-described progressive coalition to really shift the burden onto large corporations for paying for some of these services versus the sales tax, which study after study has shown is is a regressive tax, although some of the mayor's staff can argue with those studies. But there is, you know, there really is a tussle over where these funds are going to come from, and it is not it's not clear which way San Francisco is headed.
That is Michael Stoll, executive director and editor of the San Francisco Public Press, a local non-commercial news organization. They published an in-depth report about the rising cost of winning votes. Angela Woodall worked as project editor on that piece. She's also a freelance journalist. We'll talk with Angela more about following the money after the break. And John Gollinger is an environmental attorney who lives in San Francisco. He has an op-ed in The Examiner called Stirring Up San Francisco's Alphabet Soup. Today, this is a special election edition of Your Call. Every Thursday through Election Day, we will be covering local and state issues and the democratic process from 11 to noon. We'll be back after this.
This Your Call special edition, election edition. You can join the conversation by calling 866-798-8255. That's 866-798-TALK, toll free.
This is Your Call. This is a special election edition of Your Call. We are going to be covering local and state issues and the democratic process every Thursday from 11 to noon through Election Day. Today, we are talking about the San Francisco ballot. There will be 25 measures on the ballot. 14 candidates are running for seats on the Board of Supervisors, the City College Board, and the BART Board. We will also be voting for a San Francisco Superior Court judge. And if you'd like to join us, if you have any questions or comments about what's on the San Francisco ballot, we'd love to hear from you. 866-798-8255. You can also email feedback@yourcallradio.org, or you can leave a comment on our website, yourcallradio.org. Today we're joined by Michael Stoll, executive director and editor of the San Francisco Public Press. Be sure to check out their in-depth report called The Rising Cost of Winning Votes. Angela Woodall is San Francisco Public Press's project editor. She worked on that piece. She's also a freelance journalist. And John Gollinger is an environmental attorney who wrote about ballot measures on for the San Francisco Examiner in an op-ed. Angela, we just had a caller say, how can we prevent all of these mailers from flooding our mailboxes? And you worked on this San Francisco Public Press piece on money and politics, and you found that last year, local elections in San Francisco reached $28 million, the highest on record. Airbnb crushed a proposal to regulate the short-term rental industry by spending a whopping $9 million. Can you talk a little bit about the Airbnb model and how it's really become a model for other campaigns and what we can expect this time around?
Sure. Well, it's interesting. So, yes, Airbnb spent $9 million to defeat Proposition F. And they spent that money in a variety of ways. The first and foremost was $4.7 million on TV ads. And that is a lot, and certainly defies the sort of the message that they put out, which is, you know, we have local support, we have grassroots support. Nobody wants Proposition F, which in fact what they were doing in the meantime was sending out they flooded money into the networks, the TV networks, the major five, KPIX, KTVU, the other local networks in San Francisco, and they put a lot of money to run these ads, $4.7 million. The ads that they ran were created by a top consulting group in Washington, D.C. called Joe Slade White. And what they did was they created a campaign that really sort of was, one way to put it is it was a really deceptive campaign. And what they will say is that the first thing we do is we create doubt. In order to get people to vote the way you want, you create doubt, and then you get them. Then you send the message in that you want them to believe, and then get them to vote the way that you want them to vote. And the way that they did that was to create these messages about privacy invasion, about Big Brother. They really capitalized on the NSA spying fears that people have right now. They also paid for polls that TV reporters cited about the support for Proposition F. So not only were TV networks getting millions of dollars, they weren't spending it on reporting, and instead the TV reporters were actually parroting the phrases that were created by Joe Slade White, and then they were also citing polls that were paid for by Airbnb. And then they pumped a lot of money into campaigns afterwards. So Gavin Newsom, for example, was one of the endorsers, and he appeared on TV and said, and in mailers said, this is you should vote no on Prop F. This is good for you, San Francisco, or Prop F is bad for you, San Francisco, so vote no on it. Then he received sizable donations almost immediately after his endorsement of the No on F campaign. And those were just a few of the things that Airbnb did. So they really were very savvy, but what I would say is that they didn't pioneer this. In fact, what they were doing, and I think Joe Slade White, which is a very top-notch firm, Joe Biden's sister is one of the principals. Our vice president's sister is one of the principals in the firm. So it's a pretty high-level operation working on national campaigns. So I think they're taking a... they're looking at what the tobacco industry pioneered, actually. A lot of the doubt, doubt is our product. I think that was one of the famous slogans from the tobacco industry's campaigns, and that's what they did. At the same time, I think the city is so lock and step with Airbnb and other high-tech companies. I mean, it's really an incredible revolving door. And I don't mean just people going to work for the city and then going into lobbying or other positions. What I mean is there's a revolving door of people just coming in and out of City Hall from Airbnb and other companies, whether it be real estate developers or high-tech, which are now merging. Of course, there's a lot of building by high tech, a lot of real estate development, and so the two are sort of coming together in terms of their interests. A revolving door isn't just coming in and out, though. It's being in line with each other. And so it's sort of like an extension. They're an extension of each other. And I'd say that Ed Lee's office in many ways is an extension of the high-tech industry. And of course, we know that Ron Conway, who's a venture capital investor, a legend, is a big part of that. So I think what we look for in the future, we may not see a repeat of that kind of TV ad spending, but what we will see is the same strategy. And it's even more so this year because there were independent expenditure campaigns. There were PACs that were involved with not only not necessarily with Airbnb's campaign, but with the attempted defeat of Aaron Peskin's campaign. Mm-hmm. So he was running against Julie Christensen, Mayor Ed Lee's hand-picked candidate on supervisor. This year, those were independent expenditure groups, PACs. They're hard enough to see who's behind them. This year, with the soda tax, we have a C4, which is what's commonly called dark money spending. I didn't see any C4s in the past in San Francisco campaigns, but it's been active on both sides, for the soda tax and against the soda tax, or the sugar tax, if you will. Hmm. It's been active for months. And Airbnb, that leftover money from that $9 million, they raised so much money, or they pumped so much money into it. They didn't have to raise any. They could spend it. They're a $25 billion valued company. that they had enough money to create a slush fund afterwards and immediately start funding candidates in for the DCCC election, as well as that was the election in June, as well as the upcoming election. So watching where that money, the committee is called the Committee to Expand the Middle Class, and it is a general purpose fund. So they can spend it more or less on anything they want, from Sacramento to San Francisco.
I love the names they come up with these, which are often, maybe almost always, exactly the opposite of what they would really do. A committee was just formed the other day, I saw on the Ethics Commission website, to oppose a lot of the good government measures called the Committee Against Wasteful Spending, San Francisco Against Wasteful Spending, when a number of the measures are designed to streamline government, et cetera. But they are, you know, the packaging, I mean, the story in the public press is amazing. As was said earlier, you know, the rest of the media needs to get with the program because, I mean, there's great stories there. I mean, as she was talking, I was harkening back to one of my favorite shows, Mad Men. I mean, that's Don Draper. And I think the first episode said, we're going to take tobacco, we're going to sell Camel cigarettes by saying it's toasted, and spun the conversation in a different direction. That's exactly what these folks have been doing.
And there's a great documentary called Merchants of Doubt that looks at this. And thank you for exposing this group. I've never heard of this, the Joe Slade White and Company. Joe Slade White, I'm on their website. This is the group that sells doubt. Joe Slade White bills himself as a 2014 National Democratic Strategist of the Year. So doubt is really bipartisan, right?
Absolutely true. And it makes a lot of money. I mean, one thing, I've worked on campaigns, so I've never been a high-level campaign consultant, but I've certainly, you know, paid enough attention. There's a lot of financial benefit that some of the consultants, that being one, and our local ones, make from the slick mailers that come in your door. A lot of the campaign consultants make a lot of money from those. They don't make that much money from an internet ad or from sending someone around to knock on your door. They make money from the paid media, the mail, and TV is where the big money comes. So that's absolutely where you see the big-time consultants pushing clients, particularly those with deep pockets, to run TV. I saw a soda tax ad on TV already. The last dynamic I just want to mention is, as voting by mail has become more common, the election starts the first week of October, not November 8th.
Right.
And so if you're going to solidify, as Airbnb did, an early impression of something, you got to start earlier, and that's obviously what the soda tax people are trying to do.
What's hidden from public view or not often paid attention to is the massive amounts of money that companies with interest in the outcomes of the election are spending. Airbnb, I think, was the most salient example from last year, but it is not a new phenomenon. The American Beverage Association now is basically running this no SF grocery tax campaign. And they're putting out mailers, with pictures of grocery owners saying, "Well, don't tax my, I serve low-income communities and I provide healthy options." And there's actually a picture of a mango or mangoes on the mailer I got. It doesn't say sugar anywhere on the ad. That's deceptive. Just call it what it is. Mm. But there is, I think, an increasing with the massive, unlimited amount of corporate money going into local elections, there is a very quick professionalization of the campaigns, of the consulting, and the ability to completely overwhelm the opposition, regardless of the merits of what's on the ballot. Airbnb ads, there were I think 30 hours total on local television in the last 8 weeks before the election in November 2015, and that was, I believe they spent 45 times as much as the proponents of Prop F, the Airbnb regulation, mm-hmm. called Share Better SF. All told, the advertising in last year's election outran the number of minutes devoted to news on those same five stations by a factor of 7 to 1. Mm. So if you're not really paying attention, if you're not looking at those ads skeptically, and you're not letting the propaganda seep into your brain, and you're looking, you're looking specifically for objective news, it's harder and harder to find. And one of the things that I would love to challenge the local television stations to do is really to invest and make a habit of, dedicating at least one full-time reporter to election coverage in the last 8 weeks before the election.
And that is – oh, sure, Angela, go ahead.
I just wanted to add one thing, that all TV stations that accept money for federal level or sort of national level, with some exceptions, but they all have something that's called a political file, and they're supposed to, by law, post the money that's coming, who paid them, how much they got, how many minutes they devoted to the ads and so forth. So there's some basic information, really telling information, that's available online people can look at. Now, the interesting thing was that there are some exceptions with local elections, but when I called KTVU, they refused to hand over their political file for the Airbnb ads. And I actually talked to KTVU, is owned by Fox. I had a discussion with their legal representation in Washington, D.C., who flatly refused to give me the information and said that it wasn't it didn't belong in the political file, and that furthermore he wasn't going to discuss it with me, and furthermore I could not quote him, that he would tell me what I could say and then that would be that. So it's people can find that information. If you don't see it, you can challenge the networks to do a better job. Mm.
Angela Woodall worked on San Francisco Public Press's recent report about the rising cost of winning votes. She's an independent journalist. Michael Stoll is executive director and editor of the San Francisco Public Press. And John Gollinger is an environmental attorney in San Francisco who wrote an op-ed in The Examiner called Stirring Up San Francisco's Alphabet Soup. And this is a special edition of Your Call. Every Thursday through Election Day, we'll be covering local and state issues and the democratic process from 11 to noon. Today, we're talking about the 25 measures on the San Francisco ballot and 14 candidates running for Board of Supervisors, City College Board, BART Board, and we'll be voting for a San Francisco Superior Court judge. And if you have any questions or comments about what's on the San Francisco ballot, we'd love to hear from you. 866-798-8255. You can also email feedback@yourcallradio.org or leave a comment on our website, yourcallradio.org. Let's talk about measures, more measures, mm-hmm. since there are so many. John, in your piece, you wrote about housing and development measures, Proposition P, bidding rules for affordable housing projects.
Yes. So to get my head around the 24 measures, I grouped them for myself and I put that in the piece. Housing development measures, there are five of them. And the first two I wrote about are P and U. They're really twins. These, by the way, most of the measures we've been talking about and that are on the ballot were put there by City Hall, the supervisors, school board, or the mayor. Only four measures were put there by petition signature. So from time to time, you get a lot of ballot measures, state or local, and there are always people, particularly those who don't like the measures, who say we got to make it harder to put stuff on the ballot and raise the number of signatures. Almost none of the measures were put on by signature, and three of the four that were put on by real estate interests to profit. So these are two of them. P and U were put on by the Association of Realtors, sell homes, particularly high-end homes, and they spent $250,000 to put the two on. P would change the rules for how affordable housing projects that are largely government-funded are bid out. It would make it easier for private developers to win them, and currently nonprofit affordable housing developers typically get them. So it would raise the bar for when affordable housing projects are built in a way that is going to make it harder for the nonprofits to win them. That's the point. The other measure, U, conveniently PU, so some people take that to another level, and U changes the way that the affordable housing units are who gets to bid, who gets to apply to live in them. Currently, what we call affordable housing in the formal sense in San Francisco is for low income people who make 55% of the median income, which is $71,000. So people who make $30,000-$40,000 a year. What this would do is raise that to 110% of the median income. So if you make $80,000-$90,000, say if you're a tech worker at Airbnb, you would now be able under Proposition U to apply to live in the affordable housing, and the senior who makes not that much money or is on a fixed income would get shut out.
Wow.
So these they're designed to change the rules, and the good news is that San Franciscans, I find, do have a pretty good BS detector for corporate-sponsored measures. So once people figure out who's behind them, that said, we're going to see a lot of ads that will make these seem much, much more glamorous than I just described.
You also write that the Association of Realtors spent more than $250,000 to pay for petition signatures to qualify these measures for the ballot. Again, Proposition P and Proposition U.
That's right.
$250,000?
Yes, they spent. And that's always a sign that a measure is not that popular really with the people when you got to spend $4 or $5 per signature, and they had to do that just to get enough people to sign, and they did.
So how many of the measures on San Francisco's ballot were put there because people were paid, say, $4 to $5 to get signatures?
All four of the measures. So the two realtors' measures, there's Prop O, which was put on by Lennar, which is a developer in South Bay, to raise the caps. That was also paid signatures.
And this Prop O is office development in Candlestick Point and Hunter's Point.
That's right.
So what would that do?
That would lift the cap that voters imposed on how much office can be put. And in a given year in San Francisco, Lennar wants to build big office buildings on Hunter's Point area, and they want to remove the caps for that point of that part of San Francisco. The last one was put on really by a mixture of arts groups, which is the measure I mentioned earlier, Prop S, related to the hotel tax. They, though, did have to pay people to collect the signatures, although I would put that in a different category than the developer measures myself.
Michael, you want to jump in?
I think real estate is going to invest heavily in local elections. As far as the eye can see, there are billions and billions of dollars to be made by tweaking the rules. What you saw in the last election was a $310 million bond for affordable housing. I believe that is intimately tied into P, because you have all of this money now being generated by taking out bonds to be invested in affordable housing, and who gets to eat at that trough? In terms of who gets the subsidies to build affordable housing, is up for grabs, and so that's kind of a continuation of last year's debate. For everyone's for affordable housing, but there are lots of twists and turns and caveats. And in terms of Prop U, raising the cap on the income that can qualify for below market rate housing is really curious. What it does essentially to my eyes, and I would love to hear other people contradict this, is it reduces the number of below market rate houses, homes that are affordable to people of very low incomes, and the real estate industry will make a lot of money by essentially being able to raise the rents on those apartments, because the rent is pegged to the income. So there's a lot of money to be made, and there's a lot more to be said about all of these housing measures.
Well, there are a lot of housing measures. We have time for one more caller. Let's go to Mike in San Francisco just quickly. Hi, Mike. Oh, did we lose Mike? I think Mike wanted me to stop saying overwhelming too, which I have stopped. So thank you for that call. You've got a number of other measures here, good government measures. Lots and lots of these.
Yeah, I mean, those are some that have to go to the voters if you're going to make changes, such as one of them is changing who runs the MTA, the agency that runs Muni in our transportation system. Right now it's all mayoral appointees. This would balance them. There's a measure that says
Prop L.
That's Prop L. If there's a measure that's Prop D that says if a district supervisor resigns, dies, or is elected to another seat and there's a vacancy, who appoints them and who fills that seat? Right now the mayor appoints them until the next election. This measure would say there needs to be a special election, as there is with Congress or the state legislature, in 4 or 5 months. So we're looking at that having an immediate impact on San Francisco politics if it passes, because Jane Kim and Scott Wiener, who are running for state senate, both currently occupy a supervisor seat, and everyone is paying attention to D, because if it passes, there will be an election in April in whichever district, probably to decide the balance of power in the board. Prop H, I mentioned, is the public advocate measure, which I'm involved in. New York City has a public advocate, sort of an independent watchdog. Chamber of Commerce and the Republican Party don't like it because it's more eyes watching city government. There are a couple measures dealing with who gets to vote, which are exciting. exciting.
Young people.
Young people would get
to
vote.
Proposition F.
Under Prop F. That extends the voting age down to 16 or 17, only for local elections, so it wouldn't change the whole dynamic. But we would be one of the first big cities in the country to do that. And very exciting. And I've heard a little bit of debate, but there was a debate at the Democratic Party about this measure. And one of the opponents said, you know, my kids aren't smart enough or too busy. And someone else chimed in and said, my kids are way more better informed than I and my spouse about this stuff. And they're excited and they're going to pay more attention because it's a new thing. There's also a measure, Prop N, that would extend voting to non-citizens who have kids in school in San Francisco or take care of kids in school. They would be able to vote in school board elections, even though they're not citizens. And other places have done it, but San Francisco would be one of the first big ones to do it. And then there's also a measure dealing with police oversight, which is, of course, police reform and who investigates police shootings, misconduct. Right now, it's all appointees of the mayor. Prop G would rename the agency that's supposed to investigate them to the Department of Police Accountability, give it more teeth. And then the public advocate measure has a component that would allow the public advocate to independently appoint who investigates police shootings rather than an appointee of the mayor who appoints the police chief as well.
That's really important. Also, Proposition T, restricting campaign contributions from lobbyists.
Yes, and this is mentioned in the public press story and, you know, something I'm excited about because it really at least shines a spotlight on one pretty narrow area dealing with money. It would ban gifts from lobbyists. Period in San Francisco politics, including those to take trips around the world, which this and the last few mayors and some supervisors have used extensively, gives lobbyists, those gifts give lobbyists access to politicians that regular citizens don't have, and would also ban campaign contributions from lobbyists to the people they're registered to lobby.
We have a quick question just about judges. This hardly ever gets attention, but we're going to be voting on a San Francisco County Superior Court. Paul Henderson and Victor Wang are running. Where can people get good information about these two men?
I would say that is one of the more, that's one of the toughest ones. It's not a black or white issue. They're both qualified. The Democratic Party just dual endorsed both of them. So you really have to, that's one, you know, we had an election for Superior Court, I think in 2014, Daniel Flores won that. And, you know, I saw the candidates debate and really just made up my mind who I think would do the best job. Now I'm a lawyer, so I also am thinking who's going to be generally interested in the issues, but I think everyone's going to have to look at them on their own.
Michael.
One of the things that we're doing this year, and we did last year on our ballot guide, was to put together essentially a Google Doc with a pivot table on endorsements. So each page on every ballot measure and every candidate has a list of who among the major groups in the city has endorsed whom and what proposition, and it really gives you sort of a bird's eye view. We encourage people in groups who are making endorsements to send us their nominations.
Great. There are also a lot of measures affecting money, funding for City College parcel tax, seniors and adults with disability, homelessness, transportation. We talked about a few of these earlier. And on the mailers, Armand writes in and says, I handle this problem by tossing them directly in the trash. Is there any possible way to get your name off of lists so you're not bombarded with mailers?
No. If you're registered to vote, you're on the list. That's the downside of democracy. You can... I think Armand's suggestion in that if you show that they don't work, campaigns don't want to waste money. So that will do something.
All right. John Gullinger is an environmental attorney who writes about these propositions. Angela Woodall is San Francisco Public Press's project editor and a freelance journalist. Michael Stoll is executive director of the San Francisco Public Press. Thank you all for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And thank you for joining us on Your Call's Special Election Day show. Thanks for listening.
Tune into Cross Currents today at 5. We'll look into how much teachers are spending out of pocket to make sure their classrooms are ready for incoming students.
I know that that when you do your taxes, you can deduct up to $500, and I'm usually over that.
That's today at 5 here on Cross Currents.
Cross Currents from KALW News, this afternoon at 5 here on 91.7 KALW San Francisco Local Public Radio. You can find us online at KALW.org. Up next at noon, it is Bina, followed at 1 by Open Air. Kevin Vance will be sitting in for host David LaTulipe today. Stay tuned to Local Public Radio, KALW San Francisco.
I'm Barbara Lane, Director of Arts and Ideas at the Jewish Community Center of San Francisco, and I welcome you to BINA, KALW's program featuring creative voices from the JCCSF. In this series, we bring you remarkable artists and thinkers who've come to speak at the JCCSF as part of our Arts and Ideas program. On this edition of BINA, our guest is author Alan First. He's joined in conversation by Judson True. And now join Stephanie Singer on stage at the JCCSF as she introduces Alan First and Judson True.
Widely recognized as the master of the historical spy novel, Alan First is the author of the Night Soldiers series, a highly acclaimed series of espionage thrillers.